One in every four women and one in every nine men in the U.S. are victims of domestic violence at some point in their life. Domestic violence is a pattern of behavior in which one person uses to obtain power or control over another. Good evening. You're listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber. And October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Our guests represent a Ladera Ranch-based organization which helps victims of domestic violence. It's called Laura's House. We have Laura's House Clinical Director, Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist Amy Borst, and Laura's House Board Member Wayne Pinnell. And joining us is Saddleback College radio student Ken Warren. Will Amy please share with us what domestic violence is?
Sure, Dawn. Domestic violence, as you already mentioned, is a pattern of behavior that one person uses to obtain power or control over another person. These behaviors can be enacted in many ways, including emotional, physical, and sexual abuse. The big social problem that this is that it impacts nearly every segment of the population. It affects individuals and families, particularly children, and the community at large. There is no discrimination based on race, culture, nationality, or gender.
And in Orange County, what is your demographic of victims of domestic violence?
This is unbelievable to me. In Orange County, we have more than 3,000 men and women who enter domestic violence shelters each year. More than half of these women and children will become homeless and end up living on Orange County streets. In Orange County, 36% of domestic violence emergency 911 calls are made by children. 36% are made by children.
And when it's made by children, is it because of something they saw?
Yes, it's usually something that they saw. Sometimes they become involved in the actual violent act in order to protect one of the parents or the victim, so to speak. Definitely.
And you mentioned men are also victims of domestic violence. Is that common in Orange County as well?
It is. Unfortunately, men don't report domestic violence as often as women do. I think there's actually an underreporting from women as well, but more specifically from men. They don't seek out services. They don't identify it as domestic violence necessarily, and therefore they don't always seek out services. So I think that those statistics are actually lower than what they are in reality.
Wayne, share with us how Laura's House helps victims of domestic violence.
Sure, Dawn. It really is a variety of services, not the least of which is the shelter program, which is where the abused women and children primarily have an opportunity to run when they need to get away from the relationship. But we also have a thrift store over in El Toro that is used to collect used clothing and other household goods that we can use to sell, raise money for the organization. But there's a number of programs that go beyond that with counseling, community education, teen counseling, really trying to break that cycle, because if a person comes from a home where there's been domestic violence, they kind of think that's the norm, and they're likely to repeat that cycle unless they receive some education somewhere.
So when you hear that there's been a victim of domestic violence, what does Laura's House do?
Well, the initial contact might be through a 911 call to the Sheriff's Department, and they will obviously respond to that call. The organization does have its own hotline number, which we try to publish so people know there's a place they can call in the nighttime and or any day and time of the day. When they're trying to run, then we go through a series of intake procedures where a person will not just be given directions to the shelter, because as you can imagine, we try to keep that relatively secret to keep abusers away from that. So they'll go through a process where they're met at another location. If it's in the middle of the night, they'll be put up in a secure hotel or something like that and go through the intake process the next day, which would be going through some background information and just moving them into the shelter for safety.
Now, do you have a shelter for men? Because you primarily hear about victims being women.
We actually don't. We are able to, as Wayne mentioned, if somebody's calling us in crisis and needs safe housing immediately, we do have a system that we can put them up in safe housing for up to 7 days. What we do during that time is we secure shelter for men. Our shelter is specific for women and children. We are one of the only shelters that accept teenage boys as part, you know, if a family's coming in, we do accept teenage boys into the program. Because of the nature of the type of work that we do, we cannot have a co-ed shelter. So what we do is we try to put men up in a safe place and secure. There are shelters out there, but what we do is we have a working relationship with those shelters that help men, and we connect them to that service.
As a child, and I had forgotten this until we talked just a few moments ago, as a child, I witnessed abuse in my home. And I was 11 years old, and obviously it was very disturbing. As a result of that, I'm very conscious of the effect on the children. What are they like when they enter your facility?
We actually see a myriad of different behaviors. It really just depends on the coping style, the personality of the children. And really what we try to do, as Wayne mentioned earlier, is we really try to provide a safe refuge, some stability, and just acceptance and unconditional positive regard for all of our clients. So I think it's really interesting because we do see a lot of changes sometimes with the children in a very short period of time. I think because they come to the shelter and very quickly start feeling safe, they feel therefore safe to kind of act out maybe what they've witnessed. So we do see a number of different acting out type behaviors. And then we have other children that kind of, they exhibit some depressive type symptoms as well, some PTSD for sure, which for children that would be bedwetting, nightmares, insomnia, easily upset, crying, that kind of thing. So we kind of see the gamut. It really just depends, and it also depends on how, I'd say, the age of the child as well as how much they have seen. If it's a relatively short period of time that they've witnessed the domestic violence, I think there's less of a strong reaction or acting out of some of those behaviors.
As I viewed your website, I was really, really taken by the smiles on the faces of these young children as they were performing and talking about how much better they feel. It was truly amazing.
Yeah, I think it is very exciting to see. You know, every time I go to the shelter, the children are very happy to be there. I mean, even at our outpatient clinic, they come in, they're just, it's amazing. It's amazing how resilient children are. And, you know,
but on the subject of resilient children, if they see domestic violence, do they need to have counseling so that it won't impact them as an adult?
I think it's ideal. I really do. I think just to acknowledge that what they observed was, it doesn't need to be that way. To acknowledge and validate how they felt about what they observed, just their feelings of anxiety, fear, that alone goes a long way. And I think it just having that awareness and acknowledgement of it, I think allows them to kind of bring it to the forefront of their mind so that when they are, and that's another part of what we try to do is provide that education with their relationships, children at school. Bullying is a big problem at school, as we all know. So just to encourage them, to empower them, to stand up for themselves, to realize that, you know, when they're being mistreated, and to do something different about it.
I mean, one of those counseling programs or even the prevention programs that I've actually witnessed being put on is through the focus on the teens, because when they get into the dating aspect, they might not realize, or maybe they've got some repressed memories, not realizing that some of those things were domestic violence or, you know, boyfriend-girlfriend relationships are new territory for a lot of people, and if the bullying comes through or expectations come through in a different way that just doesn't feel comfortable, it's an opportunity for them to see and hear, well, maybe that isn't right. Maybe there's something we should be doing differently, or maybe I shouldn't be in this relationship. And we have a really good speaker that goes out to high schools and the like and does those programs. It's pretty good the way she does it and gets everybody involved.
Now, we all know that, as you stated earlier, that domestic violence isn't reported enough. young women getting married and thinking that, well, maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. How difficult is it to, I guess, reprogram these young women, older women, when they come to your facility?
It can be extremely difficult. Again, we see, I'd say, the gamut of people coming in at different levels of readiness to make some changes in their lives. And as you mentioned, when you're talking about somebody who has experienced domestic violence from a very young age, it's very difficult to change those behavior patterns for themselves and accepting those types of abusive relationships. It's extremely challenging. It can be. It's very difficult to kind of, there's a lot of self-esteem issues. And actually, we have a very strong therapeutic group schedule that we provide and offer to our clients. So we do have groups on self-esteem to kind of acknowledge where they might be lacking and how to kind of empower them to feel better about themselves. We also have try to incorporate a lot of different techniques to avoid re-traumatizing our clients when they come in. So we employ art therapy techniques. We also employ some techniques from a program called HBLU, which is called, it's stands for healing from the body level up. So it kind of, without having to retell their traumatic story that might go all the way back to their childhood, we try to meet them where they're at and start working on acknowledging some of the behaviors, patterns that they're engaging in currently.
Unfortunately, too, with those statistics and the cycle, there's a number of victims that will actually go back into the same environment because whether it's a self-esteem or a comfort level, it's the life they know. And so it may take people 2-3 times to break away and really be able to find a way to move on. And I think when you look at it from a socioeconomic standpoint, if the abused is really the result that they don't have any financial wherewithal on their own, they have to go back to an environment where they at least have some financial support, which is why you see things from all different walks of life that people can't necessarily just get up and go.
I mean, do you ever find successful women at Laura's house?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's just it. Domestic violence affects everybody. Everybody. We professional women whose abusers are professional men, and vice versa. Professional men whose abusers are professional women.
So is the challenge to keep the abuser away from the professional woman?
I think the challenge for us lies in providing that education to the women so that they start making healthier choices for themselves. So not necessarily, we provide safety planning, just kind of identifying what the red flags, kind of the typical red flags of domestic violence, abusive type behavior, and just really, again, increasing that awareness so that they are making healthier choices for themselves.
Share with us the red flags.
Oh my goodness, there's a list. There's some of the more obvious ones: stalking, calling incessantly or texting incessantly, needing to know constantly where their significant other is at all times, even if they're going to work. One of the things that also happens is, or can happen, is an isolation from family and friends. So basically an extended support network to kind of draw them out and away from that so that it kind of starts breaking down their support group, basically, less people that they can go to for help, or so they think that way. They think in those terms. Name calling. One of the red flags is also an intense, very quick expression of love. So after a very short period of time, a day, one date, let's say, of saying, I'm in love with you and I'm ready, you know, you're the one for me, I want to get married, that's a red flag. I could go on. Do you want me to go on?
Well, I think I'll just let everyone know that in case you just joined us, you are listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber. One in every four women and one in every nine men in the U.S. are victims of domestic violence at some point in their life. Domestic violence is a pattern of behavior in which one person uses to obtain power or control over another. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Our guests represent a Ladera Ranch-based organization which helps victims of domestic violence. It's called Laura's House. We have Laura's House Clinical Director, licensed marriage and family therapist Amy Borst, and Laura's House Board Member Wayne Pennell, and joining us is Saddleback College radio student Ken Warren. Well, Wayne, I understand that you are in charge of a campaign to help improve the shelter at Laura's House.
That's exactly right, Don. Last year in the fall, we started what we're calling the Cornerstone campaign, which is raising $4.5 million to basically rebuild our shelter, which the construction is underway at this time. And out of the $4.5 million, we've raised a little over $3 million. So we're still working to raise the balance, which do offer some naming opportunities. Included in that whole project is obviously the tear down of the original shelter and rebuilding of a new shelter, which has gotten some wonderful donations in terms of interior design, appliances, furniture, and fixtures. I mean, it really would be a nice place for somebody if they're looking to run. And, you know, some people think a domestic violence shelter has to be a bad place, but you really want to make it a nice, comfortable environment for people to really feel that they are welcome there.
Can you kind of give us a tour? You're not telling us where it's located, but give us a visual tour of what it looks like.
Yeah, the new shelter is actually a large facility that's spread over two lots. And what it's going to have is really a rectangular shape where the open center in the middle would be a courtyard, which would be the safety area for the playground, a gathering area. So obviously we don't want people from safety standpoint out in front of the house on the street or anything like that. We don't want them really to be seen by the abuser who may be looking for them. So it's a two-story building, a number of offices, kitchen, dining area on the first floor, some areas for disabled people who may need those rooms on the first floor. Second floor is really all bedrooms and a couple offices. But what's neat about this shelter is we're really able to increase the bed capacity about 93% from where we were before. We're going to be taking in about 44 people. When you look at where we were, 28 people has been consistently filling the old shelter for years. And you know, from a statistic standpoint, we talked about earlier, this underreporting issue. I mean, each year I'm amazed personally how the statistics get greater. And one thing I've challenged our board is really to see if we can get Laura's House to be big enough to put this whole project out of business. And, you know, that's a long-term prospect.
Do you think the economy has had an impact on domestic violence, Amy?
I actually do. I know that we definitely see these patterns of an increase of people coming in needing help. And it's very interesting, though, because I think, as Wayne mentioned a little bit earlier, it poses a very difficult dynamic for our clients as well if they are considering leaving that situation. Because of the economy, it makes it a lot harder for if somebody's not working, if they're not the breadwinner of the family, to find work and to get that leg up to support their family. So it's really interesting. It's we have seen, I'd say, an increase, and I also think it has posed more challenges for those clients who are wanting to leave their situation and make it out on their own.
Now, in their situation, is the majority of the victims that you see are people who actually have been hurt physically?
You know, it's really interesting. It's interesting that I would say that there's more emotional, psychological abuse. Oftentimes we have client more so than physical abuse, I would say. And that's, I'm talking about our counseling and resource center. I think at our emergency shelter, we probably see more of the battering circumstances, which that also includes or can include emotional and psychological violence. So it is interesting because we do have a lot of clients who come through our doors, feel like there's a problem, not able to really identify what the problem is. They're just not happy about their situation. And at some point through our programs, one of our most popular programs is the Personal Empowerment Program, which is a 10-week psychoeducational group. It provides education on domestic violence and also allows for processing of their personal experiences. At some point, the light bulb kind of goes on, and there's an aha moment where, oh my goodness, I'm meeting all these requirements. All the requirements of domestic violence. I fit into this category. So it is really interesting that there isn't always an identification of what they're experiencing until they can put kind of words to what they're experiencing.
Have you yourself met men or women who have been the abuser, either psychologically or physically?
Have I? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In my personal life? Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And can you tell us why they do what they do?
You know, there are a myriad of reasons. I think that sometimes that comes from their own childhood experiences. Sometimes it's because their self-esteem is so low that their need to have power and control is the only way that they can feel some type, that they can feel any type of, you know, in controlling someone else, that's how they feel control over themselves and their lives. You know, sometimes economic reasons play a part in that. Depression, alcohol, substance abuse. There's several reasons, but really no excuse.
Now, the adults or teens, what have you, go through this program. Do you have people coming back that have a repeated problem, or do you have those that come back that want to remain attached to the house?
Yeah, we actually have both. We have, as Wayne mentioned, we have a very strong teen program. It's an outreach program. It's called HEART, which stands for Healthy Emotions and Attitudes and Relationships for Teens. So we do have a lot of teens that reach out and contact the woman who presents at those. She goes to a bunch of schools in Orange County, and actually in 2009 she met with 3,098 teens who participated in 98 workshops. So she, a lot of times they reach out to her. She is the point of contact, and as much as possible she tries to get them connected to our outpatient clinic to get them services, because we also have teen groups at our counseling and resource center.
Which brings up, if a teen is experiencing domestic violence, can they get in touch with your organization, or do they need to go through their parent, which would be very uncomfortable for some?
Yeah, and that's a very good question, because a lot of we are actually able, if the teen is in grave danger, we are able to provide services to them without parental consent. It is ideal to get parental consent as much as possible, and we really work. We've had those situations. We work with the teens to try to make that happen in as comfortable a way as possible. But yeah, it's you know, and it's interesting. We actually do have quite a lot of support from the parents. We do. I think we see more younger children that the parents are wanting to get in because of their concerns that of what they've seen or experienced.
What do you mean, younger children?
Younger children, as young as age 5. A lot of parents want their younger children to come in because of concerns that they, maybe behaviors that they're noticing that they have concerns about that they think might be due to the domestic violence they've witnessed.
And are you able to help the child get through whatever that child needs to get through so that that child won't be scarred?
Well, as much as we can, I think we do a really good job with it. I think, I guess the way I kind of view it is that we, if anything, we're planting seeds at that time so that there is hopefully more of a willingness if, as they grow up, become a teenager, or noticing that they're having some problems in their relationships, that they will seek out help from somebody because they had a positive experience at Laura's house once upon a time.
What are the biggest misconceptions people have about domestic violence?
Oh,
it won't affect me. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect anybody I know. And when you look back at those statistics, 1 out of 4 women, 1 out of 9 men, you probably know somebody who's going through it right now. You just don't know it. When I first joined the board some 15 years ago, my first time around, I didn't know anybody that was a victim of it. And one of our board members turns out to have been a former client. We've had people on the board over those years that have had situations in their past, and they obviously have broken from it and have come out in favor of, you know, all the things that we're doing and supporting the organization. We've had graduates from the programs who've come back, and they speak at our annual dinners and that type of thing, and they're really powerful speakers because it's truly coming from their experiences and from their heart. But for me, I would say it's people just don't realize it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, definitely.
Well, Wayne, how can people help you with your campaign?
Well, the campaign, obviously, any fundraising campaign starts with funds. So there is still the need for money, as it is with every nonprofit in Orange County and beyond. Many will have a program from time to time to raise significant dollars. And as we are in this $4.5 million campaign, every contribution will help. We are still getting some of the larger name type donations together into there. But if people do want to help, they can contact us through our phone number or through the website. And the phone number is 949-361-3775. And the website is at laurashouse.org.
Repeat the number, please.
949-361-3775.
Now, Amy, you mentioned that it's important that anybody who's a victim of domestic violence get help, because if they don't, then in a sense it impacts the community. How
mm-hmm.
so?
Mm-hmm. Well, in many ways, if you even look at where we were talking earlier about the economy, it affects taxpayers. You know, every time an officer needs to go out because neighbors have called in a report of hearing something or some situation that has escalated, it affects neighbors as well. You know, it affects their stability, their peace. Home is supposed to be, the ideal home situation is for it to be a refuge from the day-to-day hardships of life, right? So if you're living next to somebody who is in a domestic violence relationship, it can affect the whole community just right there. And then you involve police enforcement and judges, courthouses. The courthouses are just full of domestic violence cases, restraining orders, and from that comes custody issues and divorces. And
but I also believe there could be a lot of people living the life of being a victim of domestic violence and not telling anybody and going through their life and kind of hiding a deep, dark secret.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. We do have some older clients who come to us and say it's been 30 years that they've been in this relationship. It's amazing.
What got them out? What got them to you?
Well, you know what? Sometimes it takes something as simple as a friend who has had the same experience, who can identify what they might be going through, and just encouragement to seek out help and make a change.
Tell us, what are the red flags again and signs that people should think about getting out of a relationship due to this?
I think whenever somebody has, you know, whenever new relationships are forming, I think, you know, there's a lot of ebb and flow. And whenever there are those gut instincts that there is something not right about this, it's good to bring that to the forefront of, I'd say, consciousness, to just kind of track on it. And if it changes, great. If that nagging feeling that something is wrong here is not changing, it's something to explore further, or might, you know, possibly even consider ending the relationship. Again, I think any type of very intense, quick expressions of love is something kind of worth considering, that this might be a little, you know, we all have those feelings and emotions, but I think the course to take it a little bit slower and to kind of see how things kind of pan out is maybe more ideal. So quick expressions of love, wanting to absorb that person's time and really pulling them away from other aspects of their life that they might be participating in, whether that's school or work or just social time with family and friends. Constant calling, texting, emailing, needing to know what their schedule is daily, insisting, sometimes there's an insistence on transporting the person to and from their work responsibilities, that kind of thing. So anything that is kind of out of somebody's realm of day-to-day life, that just, or freedom, independence, is something kind of worth questioning and looking out for.
You have been listening to Collage, a weekly public affairs show on FM 88.5 KSBR. I'm Dawn Camber, and our guests have been Laura's House Clinical Director, Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist Amy Borst, and Laura's House Board Member Wayne Pennell. Laura's House is a Ladera Ranch-based organization which helps victims of domestic violence, and we also had Saddleback College radio student Ken Warren. I'm Dawn Camber. Please join us for another show next week on FM 88.5 KSBR.